This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 8, Naughty Boy Nets. It's the 350th edition of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and we go back to an old school term of Naughty Boy Nets. We talk about whether it's useful or not. We also talk about coaches coaching players from other countries, and we help a nine-year-old improve his core training. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to cricket coaching or playing cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are. We don't discriminate here. But what we do is help. And who are we? Well, there's three of us involved. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garrett. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking, David.
Fabulous. What's the news from Millfield this week?
Yeah, great week. We've got covers on the square. We've got really, the groundsmen have gone for lines across the outfield rather than circles from last year.
Nice,
so that's
nice.
Been the big move this week. It's blowing an absolute hoolie at the moment, but it hasn't stopped us from being outside because that's where we practice nowadays and doing some unbelievable work. We actually had a bit of pavilion cricket today as well because we didn't have any other indoor space. So we did a wicket-keeping session in the pavilion, which was tremendous.
Your comments on the way the grass being cut has given me an idea for a 2,000-word article. So
there you go, yeah. Every year they have a difference. We've had checks, but this year it's straight lines and it looks amazing.
Yeah, that's classic, isn't it? That's
Yeah, it's
old school. Second of all, it is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, a man who cannot be described as old school in any way. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. How are we doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. And any grass cutting news from PSG?
PSG, yeah. And over here in Paris, it's long, and they've got their corner flags set up nicely. So, we've actually got one more rugby sevens tournament in about 10 days, which is kind of using the same space as the cricket does. Obviously, the squares and things are roped off separately, but there'll be 16 or 20 schools coming down for that. So there's still a bit of damage to be done before the groundsmen can really start getting to work on preparing the outfield. So a little bit of time to go yet.
Yeah, we haven't had a lot of work done at the WSCG either. It's all quiet because the mowers are in for a service. So hopefully we're going to be.
The mowers, hopefully. Did they go in last week?
Yeah, I think so, probably, yeah. So, once we've got the grass down to below eye height, we'll be ready to go.
No one thinks about servicing them in October, do they?
No, exactly. we've got some cricket coaching news that I thought was maybe worth discussing. It was, it's about a thing which is becoming a lot more common in recent years, which is a player from one country has got into coaching and he's gone to coach another country. And in this case, it's Joe Wardner, who is doing some work with England players, particularly on playing spin bowling. And he's received some criticism about that from Sri Lankan cricket and saying that he shouldn't have done that because he's going to be able to give the England team the inside track on all things Sri Lankan cricket. So what do we think about this particular case, and is there a case for coaches being held up to a similar standard as players do when it comes to having jobs in international cricket?
No, it's a ridiculous argument from the esteemed gentleman in Sri Lanka, I think. You know, you've got freedom of trade, haven't you, when it comes to coaching, and that's a healthy thing for the world game. And that's exactly why Andrew Strauss has decided to bring in people like Gary Kirsten, like Mahela and Dan Vettori into do some basically consultancy roles. So they're only 10-day secondments to come in to give some of their experience. And it's a world game, and that's good. From a playing point of view, obviously, we need to have rules and regulations around that, which the ICC do. Otherwise, you'd have people being transferred between countries left, right and centre, and any world governing body wouldn't allow that because it undermines the integrity of the game. But in terms of coaching, it's fantastic to be able to spread messages between people like Mahela Jayawardena and the England cricket team. Fantastic. And in that 10-day period, I shouldn't have thought that Sri Lankan were mentioned particularly often, because it was more about how he could give some views, some opinions, some options to the players that he was working with.
It is an unusual situation in cricket, well, I guess in sport in general, in that at the highest level, unlike business, at the highest level, teams are determined by where people are born rather than anything else. So it's interesting that is, you can't apply that once someone gets into coaching. You can't say, well, if you're coaching the national team, you've got to have been born in the country or, you know, meet the qualifications. That's a strange thing. Obviously, in business, that never happens. But it's a strange thing that happens in sport, and then it doesn't happen in sport coaching.
Well, I think it does happen in business, but there are trade things, aren't there, around it that mean that it's more difficult to bring people into businesses from overseas as a general. Also, sports people are used to travelling and used to moving around and relocating, because that's very much the nature of sport, isn't it? You know, unless you are born in a certain area and you play for, say, if I'd have played for Hampshire for 20 years and then coached Hampshire for 20 years, that's a very unusual situation to be in. You go where the opportunity is, and often that opportunity within this huge world, which is actually still quite small for us, really, in terms of sport, we can travel around and do stuff all over the place. And that's how we broaden our horizons. And you've only got to look at the impact of the BBL and the IPL and the way that the sport has changed to realise that that cross-fertilisation of ideas from a number of different cultures has really benefited the world game at large, and obviously that's worked for the players playing in IPL and BBL and those various things. But also, it's great to have coaches going around the world doing their stuff and learning from each environment and also imparting knowledge onto it.
Lavers, we at my club have brought in a spin bowling coach who did some work with the spinners over the winter, and that was really good. And that was kind of a consultancy job done at club level. How do you feel about the role of getting consultants to come into, say, a club or a school?
I guess it depends on the structure of your school, what you're trying to achieve, and what resources you've got to at your disposal in the first place. For a lot of people, it's quite a useful opportunity, though, because most cricket clubs probably get by with one coach if they have that. And they're trying to obviously develop and get better and with a limited amount of kind of resource. Whereas if they can have someone that maybe can work with spinners in your case and impart a bit of information and hopefully help them improve their way of approaching training or give them an idea of a bit more of direction of where they need to go, then that can be a good thing. Obviously, if it's something that's a little bit more repeatable, then that becomes a little bit more effective again. So if it's one person dropping in once, then there's probably some benefit. But if it's that one person dropping in three times a year, for instance, then there's a little bit more continuity there and potentially a little bit more success that can come from that. Not that that's a hard and fast rule, because what the other thing that could happen is the coach who is also at the club might pick up information, might be able to then manage the ongoing process from the information he's picked up from that consultant. So, I think it can be really useful. Obviously, if you've already got people in specific roles and you bring in someone else, there could be potential mixed messages, and then you might find that people don't take kindly to someone else coming in over and above them. So I imagine that if someone's a batting specialist and then a batting coach is brought in to kind of add, that's got to be quite carefully done. But if you've got the right characters in place and you've got people who are willing to kind of share their knowledge and want to learn and have got the best interests of the players at heart and each other as a coaches at heart, then it should work quite well. But yeah, it's just something that probably we're starting to see more and more, where more coaches are probably becoming available and clubs probably can't commit to having an extra full-time member of staff, but they can have people who can dip in and out and it probably works quite well for them.
And that relationship is crucial, isn't it? You know, that being able to understand where someone else is coming from and not feel threatened if someone says something that is different from what you think, and you're always going back to sort of it's the players who are really the ones who need to take the message on and understand what's going on to develop their own game. But that relationship between the coach and the consultant, or a coach and assistant coach and things like that, that's crucial, isn't it? Because otherwise you know, that conflict will spill over into the way that the players are coached, and that can't be good.
Sure. I was just going to say briefly, I'd imagine that in reality, the person who is coming in has been brought in by one of the coaching staff or the coaching staff as a group decision anyway. So you would like to think that in more often than not, that there is a element of kind of willingness and a desire to bring that person in from the coaching team. Obviously, as you move up the hierarchy, coaching teams increase in size, and having autonomy throughout the team is probably less likely as the team grows. But yeah, I think in a small club environment where there's a coach, or maybe there's a coach and assistant coach, it's going to be a joint decision more often than not. So it should be something that's well received.
Well, I was just going to say that I think whoever's leading up that organisation, it needs to be really open to it. So an example, this last week, I lead our fielding program in at school and lead that the technical program that underpins all of our fielding here. Yet I brought a throwing coach in to support that this week. So he came in, we did an hour and a half session with a bunch of coaches and a bunch of kids in there as well, so the kids can learn, but more importantly that the coaches can take on some of the principles that Paul Tweddle was talking about. And Tweds did a brilliant session. We videoed it, we've made it into our own little internal resource for the coaches, and we'll follow through on it. But certainly as a guy who runs our program, it's really important that I'm open-minded to different points of view, because, you know, as soon as we get into one state of flux where we're saying that only the way that I say is right, then we know that we're wrong. So it's really important whenever anybody's leading it to have that open mind, and I embrace having the opportunity to bring people in, even though sometimes they say things that maybe conflict against my coach, and it makes me think about my coaching. And also there's more than one way of doing stuff, and we know that. So to me, you know, if you're leading a thing and you're not open, then you need to have a look at yourself first before you worry about anything but anybody else.
The one thing, whether you come out with a definitive answer, I guess the one thing it stimulates in the group is discussion and thought processes, isn't it? And that can only be a good thing. And whether it's as a coaching group or as the players as a group, someone can come in and say something, and it doesn't necessarily always have to be right to get to the right answer in the end, because often there won't be a right and wrong. But if it stimulates discussion, it stimulates thought processes, and that's probably a valuable process.
I think if you look at this show, it's an example of that, isn't it? You know, a load of people that tune into this every week will be saying things that might make them challenge themselves, or might go, no, that's complete rubbish. But the fact is that they're having those internal discussions exactly the same as you talk about there, Sam. And, you know, it's healthy. It's healthy to keep checking and challenging ourselves. And in this day and age now, we've got people around us. We've got online courses. We've got podcasts. We've got all sorts of things that can actually do that. And it's a really healthy position for us to be in as a group of coaches around the world.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that we want to say. I've got the questions. So let's get started. First question. Some of the balls in an over are dedicated to keeping the bowler on.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Analyse success more than you analyse failure.
Yes. Yes.
Third question. Accuracy gets more wickets than pace.
Yes.
No.
Now let's go into more detail with a couple of questions. They have been sent in by listeners to this very show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website. And we will do our best to answer those questions. And whether we do that or not, we choose the best question of the week that wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And that's what Jason's done. And Jason says, I came across a situation on the weekend where after losing a game in poor fashion, the captain wanted to take the side out for a centre wicket practice straight after the game on the opposition oval. Several players objected and eventually the coach put a stop to it, much to the dismay of the captain who believed they needed the extra practice and not a beer upstairs. It resulted in a clash and fracturing in the ranks. What's your reading of the situation and advice? So, speaking of conflict, like we were, that is up front, right up conflict, right up front. So, what do we think?
Well, brilliant, isn't it? This is the kind of stuff that whether it's in club cricket or international cricket or under 12s cricket, whatever, it's going to stimulate some kind of discussion, isn't it? And it sounds like it's definitely done that. Obviously, getting to the stage where people are slightly fractured in the dressing room and certain people aren't entirely happy or certain people aren't happy with each other and that's why they're trying to do it is one thing, but it's obviously got to it's created such a kind of talking point that it's come he's got on the computer and he sent us an email, which is great. It's quite a difficult one because obviously it's going to depend on what the nature of the following practice is, what the nature of the defeat was. Obviously, there's added issues that it's the opposition's ground, so the ground staff might have certain objections there as well. But I'm guessing that if there's a leader in place and the leader has not only said that this is what they want to do, but the leader is justifying it, then they've been put in place and it's probably something the group should follow and it's not something they should necessarily revolt to in this situation. Obviously, if there's not obvious justification for it and they're not sort of too aware why they're doing it or they don't feel the benefit is there, and that sounds like probably the situation they're in, that they don't think that the benefit of going out and practicing at that specific time was going to be too great, then it's not going to work for them. But I generally think that people get most out of practice when they believe in what they're doing. And it might be that in this situation, it's the old, we have a case of the old chimp paradox where people are just revolting. And actually, in doing that and in not kind of buying into what's going on, they're not going to achieve a lot anyway. So it might be better just to let it go and leave it and push it for another time. So maybe rather than imposing it on a group, you should say, this is what I'd like to happen. Do we want to go for it? Do we want to try and utilise the time and the facility we have here and try and make some progression so that when we get to training in the week, we're already a little bit further ahead? And again, if that's not the desire of the group and they don't want to achieve that, then maybe it's something that shouldn't be done. It will depend on the circumstances under which you're playing, though. So obviously people who play for a living and play for professionally are under a little bit more kind of ownership of the coaching staff or the management, and whereas people who are involved in social cricket and have got other things going on in their lives, you can completely understand that maybe they don't want to waste the extra time, which is if they see it as a waste. So yeah, difficult without knowing the situation, but really interesting that those kind of things are going on and people are willing to kind of impose those sanctions on players for not performing.
I don't know how you feel about this, Karis, but I feel it's more of a timing issue than anything else. If that is something that the captain feels like should happen after losing, then that's a discussion that should have been had before long before the match was played, and you know, agreement and people bought into that long before that particular loss fell into action. And to decide if it was a last minute decision of going, right, you've all been rubbish. In order to punish you, I'm going to do extra nets with you, then that's kind of a mistiming and a misreading of the situation.
It's an emotional response, isn't it, to a poor performance? And just my experience over the years of what I call naughty boy nets or naughty boy centre wicket practice is that it's never a good thing. And it's about the way that you frame it, and it's about the timing, as you said. But to me, I've never yet been involved as a player or as a coach in one of those sessions where there has been positive outcomes. Because effectively what you're doing is you're becoming the teacher, I suppose, or the disciplinarian when people haven't performed well. And there's no doubt in my mind that when people turned up at the start of that given day, that Jason's talking about, that everybody had the intention of doing well and it just didn't happen. And that does happen in sport, but the emotional response to say, oh, we're going to do naughty boy nets or a naughty boy centre wicket practice will evoke childish responses from the kids, but that's not the player's fault. That's the captain or the coach, and in this case it is the captain who went through that. So to me, I would never do it. If I was to do a session after a game, say I had a bad loss and maybe it's rained at some point in the day and the ground was slick, I would say, right, let's draw a line under what we did out there today. However, this is a really good opportunity for us to get out there and do some sliding practice in the field, because we're going to be coming into a 2020 phase, and I'd frame it completely different. So I'd take the emotion out of the game and just say, right, here's an opportunity for us to do 20 minutes of sliding around. Let's get hot and sweaty. Let's get soaking wet through from the moisture on the ground. All shower off, get upstairs, have a beer in the bar, and let's have a chat about, you know, whatever we want to have a chat about. That would be my approach. Another approach is I took a side to Worcester, very young team. Had Andy Caddick in it, but apart from that, it was everybody who was young, come off the academy. And we lost inside 3 days.
He was never young,
days.
Was he, Caddy?
He was always 40 when he was 12, I think, Cad. But we went up to Worcester and we played well, but they played a hell of a lot better, and we got bowled out against spin. So Gareth Batty and Ray Price bowled a young side out on the third day of a four-day game. And then we finished at about, I don't know, 4 o'clock. And instead of having naughty boy nets, I said, right, guys, let's get back to Taunton. Let's convene tomorrow morning. We're going to come up against this situation again at some point, and it'd be really good if we had 3 hours tomorrow where we sit down and just chuck loads of balls on some old wickets. We start to talk to each other about our game plans and how we could go about it again, and so on and so forth. And we had one of the best sessions that we had in that year the following day, which would have been the fourth day of that match back in Taunton, but it was a constructive session rather than an emotional one. And then another example was when I was playing, is we played a side, went down to Sussex, played a championship game in a season where we actually won the championship, and this was our only loss. And we played against Sussex, had Kirtley and Lurie and the good bowling attack. I got 100 in the first innings and quite a few in the second, and we lost, got beaten heavily. And the next day, Malcolm Marshall, who was a coach, gave everybody the day off apart from myself, Jason Laney, and a guy called Will Kendall, who had actually, we'd all performed pretty well in it. And he said, well, I've given them a day off because I want to work with you on some special things. And he had us just sweeping and reverse sweeping all morning together. So it was almost a reward for what we'd done, give everybody else a chance to get the game out of their system, but an opportunity to work with us on some things that he thought would help our game. So yeah, I'm not a fan of naughty boy nets. I saw it happen once in a one-day international in New Zealand, where the coach asked the players to go out and do some shuttles after they had lost a one-day international. And I can tell you now that it didn't go down well. All the Australians, all the New Zealanders laughed at us. And it didn't necessarily work for that coach at that point in time. So not a fan of it. Think about how you can frame it and do stuff on a different day with a more positive intention in mind.
Yeah, you've got to read the environment. And if you misread it, that's going to cause you a problem. I mean, even if he'd have, even if you'd gone, do you know what, guys? I'm gonna go and do some extra practice. Can you come and throw me some balls, please, Jim? And then see what other people do to follow. Because sometimes setting that example is enough that other people go, well, you know, maybe that is a good idea.
Yeah, and taking the emotion out of it. Emotion out of it, frame it differently, and you'll get a completely different set of behaviours, either joining you or not joining you. And that's, you know, it's fine. But I think we've all been in those situations, anybody who's played enough or coached enough. But it's something that I've never done because it's only ever been bad experiences off the back of it to me.
Yeah, sometimes it's better just to let it go. and start again. Next question's from Richard. And Richard says, I wrote to you a couple of years ago about my son who's trained at Lancashire. We decided to pull him out as he wasn't learning a lot. He now has a one-to-one session every Friday where he's come on in leaps and bounds. My question is, are there any core exercises for bowling and batting that a nine-year-old can do?
Well, there's two bits to this for me. Brilliant background. Richard, I actually remember the question coming in where we discussed. And the first thing is, well, there's a few things actually, but the first thing is that obviously at the time when you sent that question in about Declan, he was incredibly young. And it's important for him to have really positive experiences at the outset. I know Lancashire have got some great coaches up there and some brilliant sessions, but, you know, a seven-year-old doing those sessions, it can sometimes have a negative effect on their experience. So it is all about experience at that age, and well done on making that decision and the outcome that you've got now, which is somebody who's come on really well and Declan going great guns. So that's good. The other thing I would say is that some people are more geared to one-to-one situations or small groups and being in larger groups doing practices, which is generally what we have as 7 or 8, 9 year olds. It tends to be group orientated, doesn't it? And for some people that works really well, and for other people they probably benefit, just like Declan has, of having that little bit more one-to-one, building that rapport, that relationship, that trust with somebody over a period of time. And it sounds like that's worked really well for him. So dead pleased to hear about that, and that our advice hopefully stimulated some of that as well, which is brilliant. And then the last thing is, yes, there is. There's loads of things that you can do, irrespective of age. I think core is somewhere that you can work on, but it's having the understanding of what we should be working on. And it's really interesting to see when you do some ECB battery tests for fitness that one of the tests is holding a plank for 180 seconds, for example, is one of the benchmarks that they look for. But the bottom line is that the muscles that we're looking to really try and train within our core stuff are things that we should be able to do for no more than 10 seconds, really, at an appropriate intensity, rather than trying to hold on to it for 180, because all that's going to happen is your big muscle groups are going to come into play once your little ones, which you're trying to isolate and you're trying to work on, have become fatigued. So to me, you know, you've got things like the plank, which we talk about a lot, the side plank that we talk about a lot, tripods, where you effectively take away one of your four. So if you're kneeling on the floor, got your hands down, you take away one of your hands, trying to keep your shoulders square. And again, you hold that for 10 seconds with one of your hands on the opposite shoulder, and then repeat on the other side, trying to keep your hips and your shoulders square at that point, again, for 10 seconds. So 10 seconds on, 10 seconds off. Run through that. And in terms of reps, you're probably looking at 5 reps of on and offs, then drop it down to 4 reps of on and offs, 3 reps of on and offs, 2 reps of on and offs, and then you're done. And I would choose 2 exercises out of a front plank, a side plank, a tripod, or something that's called a Superman or a bird dog, which is a newer name for it. I've got it sitting in front of me at the moment because we're doing this within our program presently. And hold them all for 10 seconds, have a 10-second rest, run through your sets, choose two of those four exercises, and you can't go wrong. Nine-year-old, I don't think it matters too much. You might want to change the amount of time. It might be 5 seconds, but again, that's more geared around the individual than a specific age.
That's cracking advice, Gareth. I read core exercises for, as in, you know, batting and bowling exercises that are core to batting and bowling. So good advice on core training, though. But maybe Lavers, did you read it as you know, basic batting and bowling exercises? If you see what I mean.
I read it differently both times. I read it a couple of days ago when we first got it through. I read it in the way Gareth read it. Yeah. And then rereading it today, I read it completely differently, and I was thinking about key exercises effectively, which again, it was just a completely different thing, and I'm not sure which is right and wrong, but Gareth has answered one extremely effectively, so I'll have a stab at the other.
Fantastic. Yeah. What a team.
Well, effectively, I mean, there's loads of really simple ways that we can develop young cricketers and get them doing simple things, hopefully with a bit of fun and hopefully with a little bit of volume, which means that they can get a bit of repetition in there and hopefully get a bit of confidence and some fun out of cricket. first of all, just obviously you're gauging your cricketer on the ability they're at. So we'll generally have a chain of simplicity from very, very basic hitting a ball through to going out and playing in a test match. And that can start at any level. And it doesn't mean that a 9-year-old starts there, but a 30-year-old doesn't. So hitting a ball from a tee, hitting a ball from a drop feed, a bowl feed, etc., is a really simple way to get lots of repetitions in, and easy way for them to not be intimidated by the hard ball or the pace or the bounce of the delivery, etc. So that's a really good way to try and get a load of batting under your belt. Equally, that can be added to by simply introducing some targets or some conditions or some different ideas, which make it a little bit more competitive. And again, you're working with an individual who will know or they will know what they like. Do they like something that's going to have an outcome? Do they like something where the process is actually the outcome? So managing it so it fits with them and giving them appropriate incentives or otherwise that will work for them and make them engaged in the practice is going to be key. But lots of batting against tennis balls, lots of hitting straight bat shots and cross bat shots. The style of which doesn't really matter too much for me at that stage. But whether it's driving and sweeping or it's back foot punching and pulling, getting those patterns of hitting a straight bat shot and hitting a cross bat shot equally are going to be really good experiences for them to learn at that age. Obviously, when I say crossbat shots, we've got sweeps, we've got reverse sweeps, we've got all kind of things. And I don't think we should sort of stifle their imagination by telling them that reverse sweeps aren't things that are important to them at that stage. If they want to do it, then they should be doing it, because we want to make sure that these are people who are getting excited about cricket and are developing a passion that's going to kind of keep them in the game for not for 10 minutes, but for 10, 15, 20 years, etc. So a lot of it should be led by what they want to do, and then can be managed by your experience of what will work for them. Bowling wise, again, combining the fact that a 9-year-old probably wants to spin the ball as far as they can or roll in and bowl it as fast as possible, with the general principles of a little bit of alignment and a little bit of synchronization. So we talk about 10 pegs rules all the time. They're quite difficult to do with young children who might want to have an element of competition or an element of speed in their bowling, which is fully understandable. So make sure you don't overdo the drill side of things. Try and feed a little bit in. Try and give a bit of an understanding as to why something like a 10 pegs drill or something similar is quite important. But then let them go and play. So let them go, let them run in and try and bowl fast. Try and give them an understanding of how they can get the ball going left or right or up and down as they're bowling, and let them do what actually works quite naturally for them, and then try and adapt around that. But I wouldn't core exercises or key exercises, however we want to term it, is leaning a little bit towards drills, and I think they're really good for developing young cricketers, but they're only a small part of the picture. And letting a 9-year-old play as much as possible is probably a key thing for me that they should be able to do. And good to play with other 8, 9, 10-year-olds, but also with parents. Kids love playing with parents. That's who they want to impress more than anyone else. So playing with that 9-year-old and beating him sometimes and letting him beat you sometimes, if there's an element of letting him, he might be beating you anyway. But that's what I'd say is try and introduce a little bit of the cricket side of things, but don't overlook the importance of them enjoying it and them enjoying playing the game in the way that they want to play it at that time.
And often when it comes to any of the technical side of things, often it is you don't necessarily have to tell someone to do something in a certain way, but especially with a young kid, if you ask them how they think they can do it better or why they think it, you know, the ball went wide down the leg side, why do you think it went down the leg side that time? Then often, you know, I'm amazed how young you get an answer. Without prompting, you'll get an answer that you probably would have said, well, if you do this, then that will work. But often if you ask the question, they'll think about it for a second and come up with the answer themselves. And that's a lot more useful to that player than you just telling them, oh, you need to do this next time.
Absolutely. And in something that Gareth talked about, I think it was last week or the week before, but or it might have been you, David, in the world of technology now where you can In within probably 30 seconds, you can split screen a video of a young cricketer alongside whoever you want it to be. And you can say, well, just very simply, what is this person doing? What does this person do that works? And it not necessarily that they're going to end up being an identical clone of that individual, but they'll be interested a lot of the time in that player. So if you can find their favourite player and you can have a few video clips of them batting or bowling, then they can do the learning and they can do the actual decision making as to what they how they want to move or how they want to hit a ball or wherever it might be. So there's lots of opportunity to pass the learning on, just simply facilitating it by offering them a little bit of technology around what they're doing.
I think with going back to the core stuff, one of the things that we're doing, even with our younger ones, so if you look at a normal net session, you might have a bowling machine set up working on a specific thing, for example, with a group of three cricketers. Only one person can be facing that at any given time. So something that we do here is that we get them to do the timing of when they swap over comes from somebody going through their set of a plank or their set of a side plank. So that's the timer. So they get, 140 seconds worth of balls. And then the next person comes in. So there's a rolling through because there's a lot of dead time in a lot of practices. And that's where you can do not just core, but you can do lots of other different disciplines. It might be throwing a ball up against the wall. It might be catching a ball off of a crazy catch. But if you think about all of the time where somebody is standing still in an hour session where they could be doing something more productive, then try and think about how you design your sessions around that. And it's certainly something that we're not saying, let's do a core session. We're saying, hang on a minute, if you can do a plank over there whilst you're waiting, for the next 2 minutes you can be doing some crazy catching. Then when you come into bat, that's your specific time for that. And all of a sudden their skill rate goes through the roof. Here we go. It's David's time to give us 1 minute. Off you go, fella. The clock is on.
I had an unexpected consequence of using Pitch Vision the other day, and I realise it's worth passing on. Stay tuned for an article about it. But what we've been doing to help players focus during nets is playing a game with the batsman where they have to decide how many runs they would have got. We've tried to keep it as simple as possible because it's always a difficult thing to do. But we've been doing it every single net. So we've built up several thousand deliveries worth of information about what a player thinks happened when they hit the ball or when they got out, when they got bowled or whatever it was. So now I am able to spot trends in training about when somebody gets bowled or when somebody gets caught behind or when somebody hits a four. And you can see that against the bowlers and you can see it against the batsmen. So it's taken an idea of analysis that happens in top-level cricket all the time, and it's brought it down to training using a video analysis tool and recording something regularly over a period of weeks. And that is the end of the show for another week. We are going to leave you, but before we do, we need to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. And the two questions with the prize up for grabs are Jason's one about conflict in the ranks and Richard's one about helping a nine-year-old with core training, whatever that means. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, two brilliant questions again, but the one that I'm going to go for is Jason's one because obviously something that happened last weekend, he's reflected upon it, he wants to ask some more opinions, and hopefully we've got them there, but Naughty Boy Nets,
Yeah, let's move forward from those. I haven't heard that. In fact, it's been a while since I've even heard that phrase, so I think we're going in the right direction with it, but yeah, it still happens, obviously. Now, Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted to send in their question, get the answer and maybe win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. There's also social media options. You can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can also find us on Twitter at pitchvisionacad is where we are there. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can go to your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer and you can do a search for Pitch Fishing Academy. You'll find us in there. Tap on the subscribe button to get the magic every week. And if you want to get the show notes or download the show onto your computer or stream it from the web, you can do that by heading over to pitchfishing.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link when you're there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.